5 o'clock hour on this Friday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show. Alongside Gambo, Jordan Bird filling in for Dave Burns as he is in Montana. Hopefully he didn't have to turn his plane around or anything like the Arizona Cardinals did.
I think he's leaving tomorrow. But yeah, the Cardinals had to turn their plane around. They were going through Texas, and Mark Dalton actually tweeted out that they actually back on the ground in Arizona after a rare Phoenix to Phoenix flight with U-turn over Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the vice president, media relations. Mark Dalton does a great job over there with the Cardinals. He tweeted out a picture of the plane, the track. They fled Phoenix to Texas, Texas back to Phoenix.
I was actually curious about that, if the Cardinals had kind of delayed their flight out there to kind of wait and see, but it certainly
they had to speed it up, right? Because the game was seven hours
earlier. Yeah, and that's the thing, is so that just imagine the fire drill that had to be going on within the Cardinals today where
hey, we gotta leave 7 hours earlier.
Oh yeah, we now have a noon local time kickoff, so we gotta get out there. All right, we're now on the plane. Oh wait, the game's been canceled. Fly back, turn back around. I mean, just a crazy situation. All of that, of course, pertaining to Hurricane Ida as it's going to be hitting the New Orleans area this weekend. So for the safety of all involved, that Cardinals-Saints third preseason game has just been outright canceled. That was scheduled yesterday.
I'm just reading a comment. The mayor in New Orleans, no time left to evacuate. Residents need to shelter in place for Ida.
Yeah. Wow.
So they're telling them no, can't evacuate anymore at this point.
The thing that still gives me concern about this is Hurricane Katrina was a Category 3.
Mm-hmm.
This Hurricane Ida is a Category 4. So it has the potential to be very devastating to that area that we're going to see over the next coming days, not just in New Orleans, but Louisiana and all of the Gulf Coast, how they could be hit over the next few days.
Yeah, here's another thing interesting. The New Orleans Saints plan to evacuate to Dallas-Fort Worth because of the hurricane.
Hmm.
So the team plans to leave Saturday afternoon ahead of the storm, which is projected to make landfall as a Category 4 hurricane along the Louisiana coast Sunday afternoon. So they're thinking like if Ida forces them over an extended period of time to not be able to practice or anything, they're going to get out now. So the Saints are going to leave New Orleans and go to Dallas-Fort Worth, and they'll do workouts there Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and they're going to stay in that area. But depending on just how bad this hurricane is.
If you remember Hurricane Katrina, I believe they relocated to San Antonio and were playing their games, their home games in the Alamo Dome, and they set up shop in San Antonio. Now,
they
just
played a giant stadium, too, the Saints.
I think you're right, yeah.
Hurricane Katrina. I believe they played a giant stadium. They're going to practice at the Cowboys Stadium, AT&T Stadium. So they've already worked out. They're going to leave the area, go to Dallas-Fort Worth, and they're going to practice at AT&T Stadium. Because the fear is that this hurricane could do a lot of damage and they may be stuck there and they may not be able to practice at all.
Just looking at the Saints' regular season schedule, week one, they are scheduled to open up at home against the Green Bay Packers on Sunday, September 12th. Now,
2 weeks away.
We've still got plenty of time, but hopefully the damage that is caused in that neck of the country is not severe enough that it continues to impact the folks 2 weeks from now. I mean, forget about the football game, but just the people living in that situation that hopefully we're not looking at something that deep. No, I told you during the commercial break, last week when we had 80-mile-an-hour winds here in Phoenix, that was terrifying. I can't imagine 140-mile-an-hour winds, which is being forecasted through this Hurricane Ida.
I've never lived like there was some in Long Island, like where I lived. There was some hurricanes, but not like as much as like is up the coastline when you get to the Carolinas and you get to Florida. I don't know, like it'd be hard to live in like you got a shelter and you've got a
I mean, it's the same thing with Tornado Alley. You know, I mean, that's the one thing.
I cannot imagine ever living there. Can you imagine living there?
No, I could not. And my mom is from that part of the country. And I remember when I was a kid, they would do tests for tornado warnings. And it was these loud sirens going off all across the town. And you're like, what is this? And it's like, oh, we're just making sure our tornado system is up to date and still running.
And everybody's got some place to go underground, right? Like every
house
has
idea.
A place to go underground.
Yeah, you got like a tornado shelter.
Right, in case your house blows away. You end up like, that's scary.
That's one thing, and I know we have, forest fires and we've got flooding, but hurricanes, tornadoes, I'm glad we don't have to deal with those here in Arizona. That's just something that
the heat's not so bad when you think about it that way.
Right? Yeah. The Arizona Cardinals, now, even if there was going to be that preseason game played tomorrow, Kyler Murray was not going to play. That was already determined. That was already mentioned by Cliff Kingsbury earlier this week. That hasn't stopped people still picking apart Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. And you can now add the ringer.com to that list. They had an article today headlined, Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray are running out of time to produce fireworks. The sub-headline, the vaunted air raid offense turned into the horizontal raid last season, and now the supposedly electric duo in Arizona faces a make-or-break season. Now, that's the headline, and they go into details, but just the headline itself is not it's not accurate. It's not a make-or-break season for Kyler Murray. Now, this relationship teamed up with Cliff Kingsbury, that potentially could be at risk, but I don't see any scenario
in which he's not a starting quarterback next year in the NFL. This isn't Josh Rosen.
No, not just in the NFL.
Next year.
For the Arizona Cardinals, yes. He will still be the starting quarterback.
He's their starting quarterback no matter who the coach is. Like, he's their starting quarterback. There is, everybody rushes through these things because you want instant results. Like, is there pressure on Cliff and Kyler? Sure. Like, we can't deny that. There's pressure on Cliff and Kyler to deliver and have a great offense and to win a lot of football games. And there's probably more pressure on Cliff to win than there is on Kyler. The Cardinals invested a lot of money in Kyler. He was the number one overall pick. He's actually played pretty well for a quarterback for 2 years. He's the starting quarterback next year for the Arizona Cardinals. So, there'll be pressure on him this year. There'll be pressure on him next year. I mean, he's not Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers probably puts pressure on himself. He hasn't won a Super Bowl in a long time. He's only won one. So, I don't know. Sometimes I read these things and it's just like, oh, okay. All right. I mean, it's just like, you know, they build these things up like, oh, this is it. This is it for Kyler and Cliff. Kyler's 24 years old, man. Mm-hmm. He's a Pro Bowl. Like Cliff said, he's a Pro Bowl quarterback last year. He's a Pro Bowl quarterback.
He's not going anywhere.
Not going anywhere.
And I've always kind of thought more in the terms of if two individuals within the Cardinals organization are tied together, in my mind, it's been Kingsbury and Steve Keim. That if Cliff Kingsbury's situation, if he doesn't make this work and he is out after 3 years, that's a damning indictment on Steve Keim, who is now going to be working through yet another head coach. But Steve Keim, and I have been critical of what Steve Keim has done in the past, but he has done his job this offseason, bringing in J.J. Watt, bringing in A.J. Green, bringing in Rodney Hudson, James Conner, all by all indications, what looks like the potential for a really good draft class as well. Now, we'll all see this on the field, and I can already hear the naysayers. Well, those guys that he brought in, they're over the hill. Their best football is behind them. But at its core level, Steve Keim has given Cliff Kingsbury the tools to be successful, specifically on offense, but also I do believe on defense as well. It's now up to Cliff Kingsbury and his offensive genius to make these pieces work and to actually have wins and wins come out of this.
That's why the most pressure's on Cliff. Most people will think that this is a team that should contend for a playoff spot, if not make the playoffs. That the roster is good, it's solid, good mix of veterans, young players, that this might be Keim's best draft, that this might be Keim's best offseason, adding Rodney Hudson and J.J. Watt and A.J. Green.
It has the potential.
It has the potential to be his best draft overall, deep draft with a lot of players. Look, there's a lot of feeling that Marco Wilson is going to contribute to this team quite a bit. And then you look at one of the best centers in the league that came in. That's your third round pick, by the way. So you get Rodney Hudson, AJ Green. Everybody's raving about AJ Green. We've had how many stories have there been about he's going to be the comeback player of the year, AJ Green. So there's a lot of feeling that this roster is really good, that this was a really good offseason for the Cardinals. So now you're right. It's up to Cliff to make that work.
You can't have DeAndre Hopkins running 10-yard hook routes to only one side of the field. You know, you need to throw the ball more downfield as well. That's one of the things they highlighted in this article.
The lack of downfield passing at 20 yards or more.
Kyler Murray,
total.
His career percentage of balls 20 yards or deeper downfield is 11.5%. When you now have these weapons, that needs to be upped significantly. And that can put pressure on these opposing defenses. And if you have DeAndre Hopkins that can stretch the field, Rondale Moore coming under, your running backs out of the backfield, who knows what may come out of the tight end position. This has all the makings to be a dangerous, potent offense. It's now just on Cliff Kingsbury to make that come to fruition.
If I'm Cliff, I'm looking at A.J. Green so much in these games. You know, there's usually a big drop-off from a team's number one cornerback to their number two cornerback. It's usually a big drop-off. The number one cornerback is always going to be on DeAndre Hopkins. That's going to be the challenge. Your number two cornerback is, you know, is now going to be facing a guy whose entire career has been a number one wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's, you know, that's something where I think they could really get some big plays down the field. I can't wait to see how they use Rondale Moore, Christian Kirk. But more importantly, more than anything, I just really want to see if Kyler's able to look off receivers and go through progressions and reads and run this offense the way it's supposed to be run.
Texas, your thoughts on the Arizona Cardinal offense and what you're expecting out of them for the upcoming regular season. You can do that by texting the FanDuel text line. All you got to do is text 620-620 right now. Coming up next, you're on the Burns and Gambo Show. We are starting to see what it really means to be a part of this new college football alliance. But for us here in Arizona, we might have to wait quite a while to actually see the fruits of their labor. We'll explain next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Alongside Gambo, I'm Jordan Bird, filling in for Dave Burns on this Friday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show. And we've got college football beginning tomorrow, 10 a.m., Nebraska and Illinois, a very odd Big Ten conference game right out of the gates, but so be it. And
used to seeing Northwestern as the first game every Saturday. Like, it's just so odd, you know? Usually it's Northwestern every week. But yeah, college football starting, and that's, you've got games this week, you've got games, and then obviously next week we'll get into full swing with them. So, you know, so much of the talk has really been on the Big 12 and, you know, are they going to expand? What's going to happen? It's been on the Pac-12. Are they going to expand? So we haven't really got a chance to really get into the games, but it will be fun to sit back and watch a couple of games and start to get ready for real college football, because a lot, especially here locally, a lot of the talk has been on Arizona State and the investigation, which, you know, I'm ready to move on from. When they figure out what the investigation shows and whether guys are going to lose their jobs, then we'll talk about it. But right now, I'm focused on Arizona State trying to win the Pac-12 South and win the Pac-12.
Well, you and Bernsey were talking the other day, and Sarah was part of that conversation too. It took, what, 4 years for the U of A investigation basketball with Sean Miller and Booker Richardson?
Yeah.
It took 4 years, for that to come to fruition. Yep. So if you are just sitting and waiting for an outcome with this NCAA investigation for ASU football, you could be waiting around a while.
Yes. We'll be a week from today. We'll be talking about ASU football. Week from today, we will have a game to actually discuss. And they're not the only ones. You look at that Thursday schedule, like, you know, that Utah's playing against Weber State.
Wildcats are tough this year.
Are they?
Okay, they're like sixth in the country in FCS. I mean, I'm not going to say that they're
FCS.
Yeah, come on. You're talking to an FCS guy here.
Do you really think they're going to lose to Utah?
No, I don't. But I'm saying Weber State is one of the quality FCS teams this year.
Okay.
Well, watch out, I guess.
Yeah. The Coastal Carolina, number 22 in the country. They're playing. There's some decent games on Thursday. Again, we'll have a game to watch Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And next Friday, we will be talking about a college football. We'll be talking about Arizona State's first game.
Yeah. Anyone waiting for the ASU investigation findings should probably find a hobby first, because it's not going to come down in the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. There's going to be some time.
Don't you just want to move on from it? I'm done. Like, okay, great. Three coaches were suspended. I understand. You know, Pierce might be out, and we'll see what happens. I understand, this could be very damaging to ASU.
Yeah.
But let's put it aside right now and focus on the season, man. There's a lot of kids that put a lot of time and effort into having a great season this year.
Well, and especially because it could be a special season for ASU. I mean, there was a Doug Howler piece on The Athletic today talking about the 25th anniversary of Jake Plummer's season being a Heisman Trophy candidate in the Rose Bowl team.
Not getting the Heisman.
Yeah, it was an interesting article, but it also kind of it made my mind wonder that, 25 years since the Rose Bowl season, that could be special if ASU could do something great this year and kind of celebrate the 25th anniversary of that team.
Like, you know what really sucks? Like, if you go back to that time when Jake Plummer and the great Juan Roque, Juan was such a great player, Keith Poole, you go back to that team. Does anybody really think that it would have been 25 years for them to get back to a Rose Bowl? That 25 years later, they would not have gotten to a Rose Bowl?
No.
Like that's like the, like, if I told you the Suns aren't going to make the playoffs for the next 25 years.
Mm.
Like, that's different. The playoffs, because eight teams make
it. You got a greater possibility.
Okay, but just the Rose Bowl. You go back to that season. Bruce Snyder had everything rolling. Mm-hmm. Like, they were the talk of the town. They were fun. They were exciting. And to say, like, 25 years later, like, if you would have said back in 96, was it 96?
Yeah.
In 1996, hey, if you fast forward to 2021, ASU's not going to be in any Rose Bowls. Nobody would have bought that.
I agree.
You wouldn't have bought that.
You thought maybe it was the beginning. I mean, so much of the ASU football program is talked about nationally in this respect that it's a sleeping giant.
Oh, I've heard that
just
since
waiting
I moved
to be
here.
Well, and that's what I think a lot of that conversation stems from.
I've heard
is
it
that
since I moved here.
People saw what could happen at ASU with the right coach, the right players, the right mentality.
There was an edge
to that team. You know, kind of a, like to your point, like a freewheeling. You know,
who
you
was
had
a great pass rush. They had a great pass rusher on that team. What was his name?
I'm not quite sure on that one.
I'm going to look it up.
But of course, Pat Tillman was on that team. Yep. I know that's not who you're speaking of, but there was a quality about that team that endeared itself to not only to the people here in Arizona, but I think to the rest of the college football universe. And I think that is one of the reasons why there has always been this conversation of what ASU could become.
Derek Rogers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Derek Rogers was a stud linebacker. Mm-hmm. He was so good. Derek Smith was fantastic. I'm just looking, go through that. Terry Battle, Steve Bush, the tight end. Like, that was such a really good team.
You mentioned earlier.
J.R. Redmond, Keith Poole, Jake Plummer, Juan Roque, and Gray Rugemer, and Marvell Smith on the offensive line. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, that was like, you would have never thought that in 1996 that we'd be here in 2021. They haven't gotten back to a Rose Bowl.
Well, so to kind of continue this conversation about things that can happen 25 years in the future scheduling in college football. And today, Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkoff kind of added a little bit of a new wrinkle to this whole alliance with the Big Ten and the ACC. He was at Washington State today, and he mentioned to reporters that the goal of the alliance is sooner than later move from 9 conference games to 8 conference games to allow the member institutions of the alliance to start scheduling a home and away with a different member of the alliance.
I think it's exciting. I think that that's what they're going. Like, when that meeting got over, I came out like, that's the main purpose. Outside of like thwarting ESPN and trying to not let the SEC, because ESPN owns so much. ESPN's got the rights to the SEC.
Sport.
They basically own the sport. Not let them have all the playoff games. I get what that purpose was. But I think the other part was, hey, how we could be strongest to play each other. If we come up with these, it's going to be attractive for TV. We're going to get good. It's going to help us to sell our conference to our TV partners that we're going to have these games.
Yeah, no. And the problem with that, though, is when you're a school like ASU and you have filled up your future schedule, your future non-conference schedule so much, it's not until 2027 that ASU would even have the possibility of having a home and road with other members of the alliance. Because as of right now, through 2026, they already have 3 non-conference games on the books. So if they were to lessen the conference load, that frees up 1 extra non-conference game. So you could add 1 extra non-conference game, but the idea of adding 2 to have a true home and road, that's not even a possibility until 2027.
Could you get out of some of the deals?
Probably. You brought that up earlier.
I mean, could you get out of some of them?
Yeah. I mean, if you're already paying next year, Eastern Michigan, if you're already paying Eastern Michigan to come play you and get their brains knocked in, why don't you pay them to not play you? And then that frees up for you to play Minnesota or Wisconsin or whoever else.
I know they don't want to do that, and it's not a good look. It's not because now. And I don't think you could do it that soon. But a couple of years down the road, you could say, because I don't think you want to tell a team, hey, you got to go find a new team to play next year because we're bailing out. That's too soon. 1 year. But I think 2 years, 3 years down the road, you might be able to do it.
Well,
you might be able to try to get out of some of it. It's a bad look, but
who cares? I mean, at this point, all of these things have been bad looks. What Texas and Oklahoma did was a bad look for teams not in the SEC. And they didn't seem to care. You got to look out for yourself in this situation.
It's a very selfish thing.
It is.
It's a me thing. What's best for me? Now, what's best for you? What's best for me?
And I think that's been one of the general reaching conversations of this, is that all of these decisions, mainly jump-started by Texas and Oklahoma, have been a detriment to the overall health of college football. But if that's the way it's trending, You can't sit there on your high horse and say, you know what, we're not going to make these decisions because it's a bad look, while everyone else is doing those to better their own specific situation.
I mean, it just happens, right? I mean, it was a time when Nebraska was in the Big 12, and they left and haven't been any good since. But, you know, I mean, Syracuse was once in the Big East. Like,
yeah.
You know, you get used to seeing these certain programs, and then they go away. And the health of college football is going to be fine, whether Texas and Oklahoma are in the Big 12 or in the SEC. You know, the health of the sport is going to be fine, I think. It's just going to take some getting used to.
Yeah. Coming up next here on the Burns and Gambo show, from roster decisions to COVID protocols, it's been a busy, unusual day for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and we'll get you caught up on all of it coming up next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
All right, my movie recommendation is Coda on Apple TV. That's for right. This weekend. I watched it last night.
Okay.
It was such a good movie. It was such a really good movie.
Based off of yours and Cliff Kingsbury's recommendation, I'm two episodes in now on White Lotus.
What do you think? The most unlikable characters in the history of a television
show. It is. The one thing I will say, and Burnsy already spoiled this, but there's a dead body at the beginning.
Yes.
If it wasn't for that, I'm not sure if I would still be watching, because there's not a whole lot that actually happens.
The people are miserable. They hate their lives, all of them. They're unlikable. The mystery is, who's the dead body?
Exactly. And if it wasn't for that, I don't know if it hooked me in that of trying to figure out who is the dead body.
Look, I'll be honest with you. I didn't think the ending to the TV show was very good.
Oh.
There's a couple of things about the ending I did not like.
Okay.
Unsatisfactory or predictable,
that was stupid. Like, there was a couple things about the ending I thought was. So I didn't like I thought the show was good up until the ending. I didn't like the ending.
See, so many of those, I mean, some of my favorite shows have been that way. I loved Lost. Hated the way it ended.
Me too. I still don't understand the way it ended.
And the way I've always described it.
I don't even want to try to figure it out. Yeah.
It was more about the journey than the destination.
Well, I still don't know at this point whether those people were alive or dead. Did they survive the crash, or were they always dead?
No.
I don't know.
Survived the crash, but then they're dead later on.
But did they go back to the main island?
They did.
In real life?
In real life, yeah.
And then they went back to the...
Yeah, I mean, not all of them died at the same... I mean, it was very convoluted. I will grant... Like I said, I'm not a fan of it at all.
The plane crashed. Were the people dead or alive?
When the plane crashed, they were not dead.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
They weren't in purgatory?
No. No, not yet.
But they died on the island?
Some of them. Some of them didn't.
I don't get it, man.
You guys should do a Lost podcast. Yeah. This is incredible.
Gambo just asks questions, and I give one-word responses.
Like, they were alive, but it doesn't make... Because some of them left the island and then went back to, like, the States.
Yeah. No, no, I know.
And then left the States to go back to the island. Why would you do that?
Yeah, it was a backwards, convoluted story, and that's one of the reasons why I hated that one.
That's why I can't go back and watch it, because it was just too confusing.
I think it's so
difficult.
That's
why I hate Pulp Fiction. I hated Pulp Fiction.
Well, that one can be confusing it's alternate storylines going on at different times and junctures.
Can't start a movie at the end and then go to the beginning. I need chronological orders, please.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, in any case.
Coda. Apple
Coda is Gambo's movie recommendation.
It was such a good movie. It really was it was really good. I liked it.
If you're looking to watch the Diamondback game, it was pushed back 30 minutes today with the first pitch. It was supposed to be a 4:05 first pitch. It was 4:30 local time is when it started here. And that was because the Philadelphia Phillies had to go through contact tracing because three of their players who were vaccinated tested positive for COVID-19.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Inquirer is saying that those three players were starting catcher Andrew Knapp, Zach Eflin, and Luke Williams were the three players. Now, as we stand,
on the COVID-19 list, yep.
It's just to give you an update. It is the bottom of the third, and the Phillies have a 2-0 lead over the Diamondbacks in this game.
Yeah, the Phillies remain one of seven major league teams that have not reached the 85% vaccination threshold needed to relax the league's COVID-19 safety protocols, which I don't know why they're relaxing protocols anyway, because plenty of players that are vaccinated are getting COVID right now. Plenty. So, I think these guys were all vaccinated. All three players are fully vaccinated. So I don't know why you want to relax the testing, because players like all three of these guys were vaccinated and they still got COVID.
Well, it's the same situation with Justin Pugh and the Cardinals. I mean,
sure.
He's tested positive and he's vaccinated. He took to Twitter a couple of days ago saying that the NFL needs to update their policy
and looking at it,
have more frequent testing for vaccinated players. And yeah, to your point, the NFL is now looking into that possibility. So Just an odd start to this game as the Diamondbacks trail 2-0. There was some roster moves that were made before this game. Kind of a surprise in terms of it just quickly how it happened, but not really when you look at where this team is heading. But as Drubal Cabrera was placed on waivers earlier this morning, and he was quickly picked up by the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, I'm sure that they knew that was going to happen. Cincinnati looking for a veteran player. He could play some first. He could play some third. He's a switch hitter. So, you know, they're looking to get a little help right there. For the Diamondbacks, there's no reason to play a 35-year-old as Drubal Cabrera. I mean, I think in 5 years, I don't think we'll even remember that as Drubal Cabrera played for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
That's a good point.
No, there's certain guys that, you know, do you remember Carlos Baerga playing for the Diamondbacks?
Vaguely.
Remember Roberto Alomar playing for the Diamondbacks?
Yeah.
There's just certain guys that play for the Diamondbacks. Like, wow, that guy played for the Diamondbacks? It's pretty interesting. You know, like, I think that he's going to be one of those guys you barely remember. He didn't play very well. He hit, like, 240. He's a veteran player. There's no reason for a guy 35 years old with no future on the Diamondbacks to be playing. They need to give that time to other players like Drew Ellis. They need to give the younger players an opportunity.
Well, and to that point, I know it's not apples to apples at the position, but the guy who is now taking his spot on the big league roster is Jake McCarthy. He was called up from AAA Reno earlier today. He's an outfielder, but he was the 39th overall pick in the 2018 draft. So this is a guy who is young. He will, whenever he gets his first action, will be making his major league debut. So it is now a full youth movement for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And yeah, it just does not make sense. And then also for Cabrera, I'm sure he's pleased to get out of town and now be on a roster where they're contending for a playoff spot. The Reds right now are two games up on San Diego for the second wild card spot in the National League.
Yeah, I know the Diamondbacks, they also released, Josh Reddick, you know, got released. So they designated him for assignment, you know, 3 weeks ago to give him an opportunity if he wants to go hook on with somebody to give him an opportunity to go play. I don't believe that he has hooked on with anybody at this point. I don't believe he's played for anybody since they designated him for assignment.
Jake McCarthy actually got the start in the Diamondbacks lineup today. So, I mean, he quickly got thrown in.
I don't know how much of a prospect he is for them. It's a shame what happened to the number one pick overall.
I know,
with that shoulder injury, he's going to be out for like 7 months. That's just brutal. That's tough to handle. But, you know, hopefully he'll be able to be ready to go for the start of next season.
One other thing with the Diamondbacks, Ketel Marte left last night's game with a hip injury, called it a hip discomfort. You have the details on the status of that.
I talked to the Diamondbacks this morning. They said he wasn't going to play today, that he'll be day-to-day. They didn't think that there was anything to worry about. They just said he'll be day-to-day, and they're hopeful he'll be back in the lineup very soon.
So there's your Diamondback update. Once again, it's the bottom of the third right now, Philadelphia with a 2-0 lead over Arizona. Coming up next, or I should say, do you know a high school student with great character? We want to hear about them and know how they impact their community. Just text STUDENT to 620-620 to share their story. What's in it for them? A $10,000 scholarship from Parker & Sons and Arizona Sports. All you got to do is text STUDENT to 620-620. The nominee must be a resident of Maricopa County to be eligible. Coming up next, we thought we were going to get a glimpse of the Arizona Cardinals and their final preseason tune-up tomorrow. Thanks to a natural disaster, that is not the case. We'll fill you in on the details of Cardinals, Saints, next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Getting set for the weekend here on the Burns and Gambo show. We were supposed to be getting set for an Arizona Cardinals preseason game, their final preseason game of the season against the New Orleans Saints. Initially, it was going to be a 5 o'clock kickoff time here in Arizona. Earlier today, it got moved to 10 a.m., and now the game has been outright canceled as the impending Hurricane Ida is coming in through the Gulf Coast and is expected to hit the New Orleans area extremely hard this weekend. In fact, the Arizona Cardinals, Gambo, were on the plane flying to New Orleans and had a U-turn over Texas and come back. They are now back in Phoenix after the game has been called off.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the Cardinals had to leave a little bit earlier because of the time change. Mm-hmm. They were going to move the game 7 hours. And that, you know, this game would have played instead of 5 o'clock in the afternoon, it would have played at 10 o'clock in the morning. So I'm sure the Cardinals' plan was to leave a little bit earlier today to get out there in time. But listen, this is a very dangerous situation. They're evacuating people there. They're saying it could be a category 4 hurricane. So the Saints, even the Saints, have evacuated. They have the Saints yeah. are leaving to go to Dallas ahead of the hurricane. So the Saints are going to evacuate, and they're going to go to the Dallas-Fort Worth area because of this hurricane. They're going to leave tomorrow afternoon, so no game for them. They're going to leave tomorrow afternoon because of the Category 4 hurricane. They're going to stay, and they're going to practice at AT&T Stadium in Dallas, and just to get out of New Orleans in case there is a lot of damage and that they can't play and that they can't practice and things like that. So their plan is to stay in that Dallas area for a few days and just make sure everything's okay and get their practices in at AT&T Stadium.
They still have plenty of time, or they still have time. Their week one opener is at home. It's supposed to be in the Superdome against the Green Bay Packers. So we're still 2 weeks away from that. And you would think that even if there is some sizable damage in the area, that they would maybe be able to play that. But you know, this is a safety net. And we were talking about before, during Hurricane Katrina, the Saints had to set up shop in San Antonio and play their games in the Alamo Dome. And, you know, this is something that they have been used to, unfortunately, with the weather and the hurricane season that can come through New Orleans. As much as I don't want to undermine what people in New Orleans and Louisiana and the Gulf Coast are going through, because lives can be in jeopardy, property damage, you know, your home could be ruined here in the next few days. In the football sense, this really doesn't make that much of a difference for the Arizona Cardinals.
Probably not. I mean, for the individual players to get some tape to, you know, make some good tackles or have a good play that you could show on tape to another team that may be looking to fill up a roster spot or add somebody to their practice squad. I think it's good for them. I think, listen, here's the other thing. It's not like they're playing next week. They've got 2 more weeks to practice. They've got 2 more weeks. If they've got to really determine who's going to be the third string running back and who's going to be the fourth, they can figure that out in practice. Mm-hmm. They don't need to figure that out in a preseason game. So that's the other thing. You've got 2 more weeks before you're going to play your first regular season game. That is plenty of time to figure out some things.
It is just for that, specifically for Jonathan Ward and Eno Benjamin, those two guys competing for that third running back spot. Cliff Kingsbury has even said, you know, that one, the decision on all of these roster decisions are going to be comprehensive through training camp in the preseason. It's not like, you know, this New Orleans Saints game was going to be the end-all, be-all decision maker in some of these position battles. But for those two guys in particular, they're both second-year guys. So they had no preseason last year,
no
offseason due to COVID. This year, you get a taste of training camp, you get a taste of preseason. But Kingsbury was saying that this Saints game was going to be the most touches those two guys were going to get since they've been in college. And so I'm sure they're on a personal level for those guys. There is a disappointment, but in the grand scheme of things, if you really needed 8 more touches from each one of these guys to put you one way or the other, then you probably didn't have a good feel on the decision-making of this position battle to begin with.
But if both guys are going to make the roster,
and do you think that's the case?
I think they both make it.
Okay.
They both could play special teams.
Yeah.
And
well,
one will
yeah.
dress and one won't. So, like, I think if you anticipate they're going to keep 4 running backs and both are going to make the roster, I mean, the only thing we're arguing over here is which guy's going to dress on game day and which guy's not going to dress on game day.
Yeah.
I think the third running back will end up getting some run with this team. I mean, I expect that because, you know, whether it's Chase or Connor, there's a chance somebody's going to get hurt and that you're going to need to play one of those guys. Plus their ability to play on special teams. You're right. We haven't seen Eno play since Arizona State.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since we've seen Eno play.
We've got a
play.
Few glimpses in this preseason, but I mean, it was just a little bit of appetizer. As it stands right now, and we just laid out that this decision is not going to be made tomorrow. They still have 2 weeks before the season. But as we stand right now, they both make the team, but who do you think has the edge as the third running back?
I don't know. I mean, that's one I'm not really comfortable with. I don't know. I mean, it's probably a toss up. It's probably very close, and I think that they've made up their mind on which guy's the third running back at this point? Probably not. It's probably a discussion that has to be an ongoing discussion over the next couple of years. Eno played well, and then Ward came back, and Ward played well.
Mm-hmm.
I also wouldn't be shocked if it switches on a
game-to-game basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think could switch on a game-to-game basis.
And that's the one thing with these two guys is that they are different in what they bring to the table. Eno Benjamin is more quick-footed, scat-back type guy, While Jonathan Ward is a little bit, I'm not going to call him a bruising running back, but he's more of the guy between the tackles that can get you short yardage situations. So yeah. That's a valid
point. Depending on what you may need.
Yeah, and depending on that week's opponent and what their defense presents to you.
I'd love to see, listen, I mean, I don't, just because of Eno's ties with Arizona State, I'd like to see Eno get the opportunity to play.
You and Bernsey were talking about it the other day, and if Eno Benjamin is not an ASU Sun Devil, there's no way we put this much effort and attention into the third running back spot.
Good in college, man. Mm-hmm. When you watched Eno Benjamin play in college, like, oh man, he's going to be a great pro. Like, I remember watching Eno and thinking, like, I think he could be a starting running back in the NFL. He was so good in college.
Yeah.
That you think, okay, he's going to find a way to, but you got to get the opportunities. He hasn't got the opportunities yet. I'd like to see him get those opportunities. I still think he could be very good.
Well, and I think he's gone about everything the right way, where he's learned to
play special teams,
pass protection, mm-hmm. all of those things that they were knocking him for last season. It seems like he has learned his lesson and is picking up on those.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I'm looking forward to watching him play. We'll miss the game tomorrow. We'll have some college football. We will be, good job filling in, Jordan. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Gambo.
No Bernsey next week. I think Luke will be filling in with
Correct.
Me next week. So, Sarah, great job. Jordan, Bear, thanks for filling in. For Jordan, we're going to be back Monday, 2 o'clock sharp, right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Have a great night, everyone.